This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Through the ages, the way we view bats have been tainted by stories like Dracula and Batman, champions of good or evil blood-sucking Transylvania royalty. In reality, bats serve an essential role in our ecosystem, and they need our help. This show, The Pet Doctor, is all about pets, but I'm not advocating that you keep these amazing creatures as companions. My hope is to dispel some of the myths about bats and to better understand their behaviors, biology, and our interdependence. This way, with a bit of luck, we both survive the changes that are going on around us. If you have the chance to visit Monteverde in Cloud Forest of Costa Rica, a trip to the research center, the Bat Jungle, is a must. I was fortunate to visit this unique attraction and meet today's guest, biologist and bat expert, Fino Baker. We'll be right back after this short break.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your Cat Tree Tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Vino, thank you much for being with us. I have to admit, when I was told that in my tour I was going to go to the Bat Jungle, I wasn't really sure about this. I have a feeling quite a few of your guests feel the same way.
Indeed, because it's unique. But when people are traveling or on vacation, they have a couple of days, for example, Monteverde, and usually there's a lot of adventure. Walking bridges, canopy, more commercial also than like frog ponds and butterfly gardens. But the bats are totally unique. So when people enter here, they leave like amazed. As always from, it's a total new experience. And that's what we are here to show to the both more what bats really are.
Okay, perfect intro. So what bats really are, I think a lot of people think that they're just flying rodents. Some of them going, well, really, what is a bat? They're kind of scary. You never really get to see them. So what is a bat?
In most languages, bats are called mice with something, mice with wings. Hmm. Except in English, bat is old Norwegian from the Vikings, from a leather flapper. But as most people think, they're mice with something. They're totally not thing to do with rodents. Of course, they're mammals, but really closely related to like primates and lemurs even. Opposable thumbs, one baby maximum mother a year, not like rodents who have 10 babies every few months. It takes decades to repopulate a small bat family. And then there's all the other superstitions. When we start here a tour and to people, I like always to ask people, are they blind? Are they mice? Do they spread diseases? Do they get stuck in hair? Of course not. They're totally not blind. They even have, in here in the tropics, better vision than humans, night vision. With all respect, I never saw like a bat with glasses yet. But those are all from the famous Dracula stories, Hollywood, Bram Stoker, nothing to the bats. Bats are so important, crucial, because they're all over the world. Insects evolve in a lot of cases at night, like 85% of the insect activity in the world is nocturnal, naturally controlled by bats. They're humans' best friends, but people don't realize that. We became afraid of the night, the shadows, something that attacks us, that hang in the neck of people, spread rabies, nothing to do with that.
Well, we can stop the interview right now. You've just answered all our questions about bats. One of the things that I thought was just fascinating because, all right, I'm a veterinarian and I know something about anatomy and biology. And going through your exhibit, you had a skeleton of a bat. And it was fascinating because it looked kind of like a very elongated cat or a dog. The arms, the legs, the pelvis, everything else, just like, wow, this truly is a mammal. But as I understand, bats are the only mammals that can truly fly. Now, people think about flying squirrels. What's the difference between a flying squirrel and the way that a bat really flies?
There's a few mammals who can fly, but it's not active flight. It's like a parachute. Only active flight in mammals in nature, bats. The capacity to fly with hands, not a wing, not hollow bones, not feathers, but real muscle. But of course, flight and synergy. They have a really high metabolism from the moment they fly, they need food. And that's why they're so important, the insect control. It is the bone structure, the articulation, the number of bones, really, really similar to like a primate skeleton.
And how fast can they fly? Because all of a sudden, there's around here sometimes in my area of Southern California, I know there's bats. I don't see them where I'm living. I'm probably just not paying attention to they're out there and thinking, oh, that's just a bird that's flying at night someplace. But how fast can they fly? And my producer, I was chatting with him, Mark, before we got on the air, and he's in Florida. He goes, I never see bats. So are bats everywhere in the world?
They're everywhere in the world. Where there's an insect, there's a bat. There's bats in the central of Alaska and the highest mountaintops in the world, in the middle of the desert, where they pollinate cacti, for example. And the islands, the power flight, there's the best habitat adaptation in nature in mammals, bats. But of course, when we were young, or our parents were young, there were much more bats everywhere, 20, 30 average in the garden. Now, most species are in danger of going to extinction. There's only a few, and that's why I see much less. And of course, we don't have night vision. Just from the moment it's sunset, they come out. Insects come out, bats come out, and then it's difficult to see them. Just like over some water ponds or some lakes, then you see them flying over there. But normally it's not easy to see them. They're the shadows. Here in the tropics, for example, there's more bats than birds. But how difficult to see like a quetzal, the beautiful representative quetzal from Monteverde, or like a toucan? Quite difficult. A bat is really tiny, camouflaged, but in fact, all over. But there's bats, the flight, in fact, amazing. A few months ago, an article appeared from a Mexican free-tailed bat. The species is in southern Florida, is in southern California, is in most parts of the state. And they make huge colonies, nursery colonies, like Carlsbad Caves, New Mexico, Texas. They're found flying up to 2 miles high, where the highest beetles are found in the sky. And
wow.
Then they're up to 100 miles an hour, the fastest active speed in nature. So now there was always the swift. The bats are found up to 100 miles an hour. Here in the jungle, in all that labyrinth of the jungle, bats can fly up to 60 miles an hour.
Amazing. That is just amazing. Wow, 100 miles an hour, and they're doing it on their own. And their bodies, I know they just vary so much in size. So there's the flying fox, if I have it correct, the largest one that's out there, and then these little teeny beanie ones. So what's the size difference? What's the largest? What's the smallest?
The smallest mammal on Earth is the bumblebee bat. The bumblebee bat from Thailand, and a really small bamboo valley there. It's catching really small, tiny mosquitoes and insects, bumblebee size. Here in the tropics, there's bats up to 3 feet wingspan, carnivores, meat-eating bats. Here is the one who's called the false vampire, false because they kill the prey. They leave a pile of feathers and bones behind them, just like a hawk, like an eagle, like an owl, the same principle in bats, carnivore, tropical bats in the forest. In the bat jungle, we don't have them inside because they would eat the other ones. You don't put just the puma with a cat. The largest one here, 3 feet wingspan. In the world, like in Indonesia, 6 feet. And there's in fact 200 species of bats who are called flying foxes because they have a puppy face, a fox face. They're from tropical Africa over the Middle East to Japan and Australia. And like in Indonesia, Philippines, and so to 6 feet wingspan. Huge, but cute. And of course, they eat fruit, leaves, and nectar. They're the most important, like seed dispersers and pollinators of African tropics, Indonesian, Indian tropics. The largest migrations on Earth are like flying foxes in Africa. They eat fruit, not children. People tend to eat them. Well, a native from its supposed delicacy.
As Vino, right now, you were saying, you know, here's this huge bat, and some are carnivores, and they kill their prey. It's like, okay, you know, thinking about a bat that eats a mosquito, all right, that's pretty good. But one that actually comes down and kills something and eats it and has a 6-foot wingspan, I know they're not one of the same, that gets a little scary. So these carnivore bats, they're not eating children, you said, but what are they eating?
Now, here in the tropics, the 3-foot wingspan bats, there's bats who eat frogs with chemical sensors detect if a frog is poison enough. There's bats who are specialized more in birds and or bats, lizards, mice, small rodents in general. On the coastlines of Costa Rica, there's fish-eating bats. Bats scoop up to 20 small fish a bat a night, and they bend them to pouches. They store them in pouches in their cheek. They're called the bulldog bats here. But then in the world, the flying
foxes...
They're
little chipmunk bats.
Exactly. Here, the flying foxes in the other part of the world, the older part, the old tropics, they don't eat meat, luckily. They eat fruit leaves, nectar, and pollen. Okay, that would be another world if they would eat meat. People would need much more afraid.
All right, so vampire bats. You were talking about Bram Stoker and then having Dracula and all these stories of vampire bats. And you also mentioned getting caught in your hair. And yes, I think a lot of people freak out. But number one, talk about vampire bats. And what do vampire, they eat blood, suck blood. So they're not going after people, I gather.
Now, there's 1,340 bat species in the world now. Most... 70% or more are insectivores, really tiny ones, like the ones in the States. But then there's bats in the tropics eat fruit and nectar. And then there's 1% tropical carnivores. And in those are included 3 real vampire species. There's 3 species of 1,340 bat species in the world who drink blood, who suck blood. They are called vampires. The 3 are in Costa Rica, in fact. 2 to South Mexico. 2 like to South Argentina and Chile, where you get even blood from penguins and sea lions in Patagonia, but the 3 are in the tropics of Central and Latin America. There's, to make this clear, there's no vampires in Transylvania. There's blood-sucking animals found all over the world. In Congo, here they found a long time ago blood-sucking butterflies. In the Galapagos, there's blood-sucking finches. There's blood-sucking animals all over the world, but Bram Stoker made the small, tiny vampire from Central and Latin America and a legend. But as they're really tiny, they weigh like less than an ounce. They take more or less a teaspoon of blood for a cow that is nothing. And in the past, there was like 5-10 small families running together, running in the jungle behind deer, tapirs, wild cats, pumas. But when the Spanish decolonization brought all the livestock to these countries, some land was cut, cows were brought in, easy prey. They just suddenly didn't have to run behind deer anymore. Now they can walk every night to a McDonald's. There's a Big Mac on every corner waiting for them. They became plagues. From small families, they became colonies. All your bats and human activity go down in number to a minimum. That is the only one who got a benefit from humans. They go up, they became plagues. Now, not that they kill the prey, not that they like attack also people. They know that we are not easy victims. People sleep inside. They learn it through history. If they will come to us, we find them and the farmers kill them. They smoke them out. They gas them out. They try to kill the colony. But if they come just to a chained dog or a pig or a cow outside, it's easy. And just they don't kill a teaspoon of blood, but we have now as a farmer, a poor farmer, 10 cows, and there's suddenly 20, 30 vampires coming every night to a couple of cows with time, night on night on night. Yes, there's side effects. There's weakness, there's anemia. There can be a butterfly infection, a cow dies. People hate general than bats. It's the bad guy to all the others. Really interesting about vampires, we're talking about climate change, because they're a tropical animal. Now from millions of years of evolution, Central and South America, tropics, in the last 34 years, they moved from South Mexico over the coastline to like Baja California, to the border of the States. It was not always as cold anymore at night as before, as they were able to move over the coastline, over the desert of Mexico, to the border of the States. Now, why is that important? Well, in the next 30, 40 years, probably they can enter illegal in North America, whether well or not, they can fly over it.
But, on the other but it's side, going to be transparent. It's going to be hard for them, yes.
It was a bad joke. I'm sorry for that.
That was a good one.
And they can make it as over a possible wall, but on the other side, they would smell the cows and the horses from Texas, Florida, and those vampires can come in. Between a joke and the truth now, okay, all the good efforts about bat conservation, protecting the huge colonies on the border of the states with Mexico, suddenly there will be a new species coming from the tropics, a vampire with all the bats rap about it, relay with Quentin Tarantino, attacking our cows, the cattle, relay with diseases. That will be a really tough part for the bat PR then in the States.
So we have the vampire bats who, because we now have McDonald's out there for them, all this large livestock, that's yes. One type of bat. But you also mentioned that there are the insect-eating bats. And that is such a major problem because we know mosquitoes in particular, that so many bats like to eat, they are spreading disease. So what are the numbers of these mosquito-eating bats compared to the vampire bats?
And that is the really amazing part. It's not about vampires, but about the insect control. And 85% of insect activity in the world is nocturnal, comes out at night. Bats is the natural control on like 85% of the insect activity worldwide. Without them, there wouldn't be crops. Everyone has mosquito plagues. This flight needs energy. They come out, mouth open. There's other strategy also, but mostly mouth open. All the mosquitoes in, high speed, aerodynamic. And a few minutes later, mosquitoes out, the guano, the fertilizer of the land. That is the real function of a bat. Flight needs energy. A bat can scoop up 1,000 mosquito-sized insects an hour, 3,000 a night. They sleep for 20 hours. There's other strategies with larger ears all over the world who scoop up in the understory, bigger prey, for example, cockroaches, caddis, spiders, beetles, grasshoppers, whatever that comes out. There's an official number between those two strategies about 1,000 insects a bat a night.
That's
There's
amazing.
A colony, the largest mammal colony on Earth in Texas, the Bracken Cave in San Antonio. There's 20 million bats in there, flying, emerging every sunset. Amazing. But you have to have special permissions to get over there. There's a more famous one, like Austin downtown, the Congress Bridge. That is the largest urban bat colony on Earth, 2 million. Let's go back to the Bracken Cave. 20 million bats devour an average of 250 tons of insects every night. 250 tons of insects every night. No one can even imagine what it is. A bat in California, a bat in Costa Rica can scoop up over 1 million insects a year. Insects is the food source of nature. Bat is the natural control on about that. And then the fertilizer of the land. How is it possible that it became the blood-sucking thing hanging in the neck of people? No one understands that. Until like 15 years ago, people were not talking about these. Now, when it's almost too late, panic. But about bats, we need urgent eradication, our bat friends. And when you don't have healthy bats, diseases start. Especially when there's human activity, bats get to a minimum. And habitat destruction, fragility, pesticides, where people use pesticides in the tropics and or in the States, then diseases break out. For example, Zika in Brazil, where Monsanto is used. Costa Rica, two examples, the coastlines where the pineapple and melon fields are for the world. Caribbean, where the banana fields are for the world. There's a lot of pesticides since decades. Then dengue and chikungunya start over there. The east coast of the States, since 2006, has a huge decline and almost extinction of bats, thanks to a syndrome called the white nose syndrome. We can soon go to that. But there's since then, people on the east coast, I wondered why they have mosquito plagues, why the West Nile virus started there, getting all over the territory of the U.S. now. It's just to show how it's related. When there's no healthy bats, diseases start behind. And then we have to put more pesticides to circle without an end.
It really sounds like that butterfly effect where one little butterfly in the Amazon who's killed and it just continues and we're all so interrelated. I'm chatting right now with Vino DeBaker. He is biologist and bat expert, as you can easily tell, in Costa Rica, Monteverde. We're going to take a short break and be right back talking more about bats.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Get the stinky dog away from me.
Bad breath and bad gas.
Petey stopped eating. All his hair fell out.
Itching, licking, missing fur.
At least $5,000 in vet bills.
Creams, antibiotics, sprays.
No results.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
Dinovite. com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
The shedding has stopped and the itching has stopped.
Her coat is not soft, it's silky, it's healthy and
shiny and glossy.
She's got life. She's got energy.
Tons of energy. No more bad smell.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Dynavite is the best thing that's ever happened to my dogs, you know, besides me, of course.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dynavite for life.
DINOVITE.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Vino, this is just really very interesting. And yes, you were talking about the decrease, the way that bats are now really becoming endangered. But I think before we get into that, I'd like to go back a little bit into the biology of bats and their unique characters. At the beginning, you were talking about the fact they're not blind, they fly at night, and they hang upside down, and they don't get in your hair. So one at a time, how do they fly at night?
They have first good vision. Blind as a bat at noon was the original correct English expression, at noon. Please use the last two important lost words again, at noon. They have perfect senses, a really good smell, a really good exceptional hearing capacity, and most bats have excellent night vision. Of course, in difficult circumstances like mist, storm, rain, or when they enter in case, in total darkness, eyes don't work anymore, then they switch to another strategy, echolocation. And that is from vocal cords, ultrasounds. People are not capable to hear that. They produce ultrasounds by immediately the rebounds of any tiny object. They can detect and avoid up to one human hair in total darkness. One human hair. Our machines, radar and sonar, are not even capable to get close to that.
Another reason why they don't get caught in our hair, because they know where our hair is. All right.
And that is another popular superstition, but most of us, when we walk around in terms in Costa Rica, on the beaches, all over the world, there's mosquitoes around people. When a bat approaches us, we don't see the mosquito, but a shadow, a wing, a flap of a wing, and people, they get stuck in hair, they attack us. No, they're always protecting us. They're never attacking, they're protecting us. Like, and if they can fly here, just again to the jungle, like 60 miles an hour, they'll never hit windows, they wouldn't get stuck in someone's hair just like that, no.
So echolocation, people go, wait a minute, I think other animals use that. So we know dolphins and whales use echolocation, so that's how they're getting around. But, okay, why do they hang upside down? If, you know, they're mammals, you and I hang upside down, all the blood's going to rush to our heads, and we're going to pass out. But bats, why do they do it?
That's an excellent question, and I love to answer that. In fact, people can be considered as strange ones compared with the bats. On the land, probably, or may, it's better to hang upside down than to stand on the earth. If we would hang upside down, we drown our own blood. We have valves in the veins from the heart to the feet, but not the opposite direction. We would drown our own blood. A bat, we can hold them whatever upside down like this. They can be on the floor, but they don't like it. Up is better. And, of course, everyone is asking now, why? But two main important strategies in nature, safety and energy. Safety up is safer. Everything is safer. The trees, the caves, human constructions, they can hang under bridges and mines and church towers and belfries and attics. Safety. And then there's no energy in hanging. The bat hooks in on the nail. Hooked in, they can hang on one claw, two claws, it doesn't matter. They can hibernate. I'm originally from Belgium. They hibernate 6 months there. From November to March, they're just hooked in. No problem. We have to sit down, lay down, and then the third, less energy take off. They just let go and they fly, easier take off. If it's all about energy and safety, basic strategies in nature, then we can consider ourselves the upside down ones for the bats.
Interesting. You are also mentioning about the colonies of bats, where some bats live in just a few bats in a family, and then these huge areas. And I'm going to San Antonio later this year, so definitely looking forward to seeing the bats there. But these colonies, they have a social life. I thought was so interesting visiting the bat jungle, that you had an opportunity to see these bats flying indoors in this wonderful enclosure, and you could hear them, and they really were the way they were interacting. So tell us a little bit about the social life of a bat.
One of the most social creatures that exist. There's a few are, of course, couples for life. There's solitary ones. There's huge colonies. There's families. Really, really social behavior. But the most amazing, bats use babysitters. More and more discovered. We saw that here also inside, that it can use midwives helping giving birth to each other. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe necessary because when a baby is born, it's a third of the mother's body weight.
Wow.
They only have one. A few species in the world can have like twins or triplets even, but that is definitely not common. It's like people have triplets or four at a time. There's one baby, when it's born, it's a third of the mother's body weight. Imagine a human baby, a 50-pounder human baby at birth.
No, that hurts.
There's one. Of course, it's a mammal. They nurse it. They have it always really protected. And that's why they use when it's usually cannot fly with. When the mother goes out for food, in a lot of cases, they leave it with babysitters. Others help them giving birth. The species found to get rid of people. The few mammal species in the world who adopt orphans. But vampires are amazing in that. All the social altruism behavior, everything like a little bit like this, but upside down.
They just, again, when you first think of bats, it's really one of these a little bit disconcerting feelings, like, oh, they're kind of ugly looking. But once you start looking at their little faces, going, oh, it's just different. You know, some people will look at possums and think they're just ugliest creatures on earth and going, okay, they have their redeeming features. They're a little bit different, but their little noses and their little eyes are really kind of endearing when you get used to them. You'd mentioned that bats were extremely important to our world health, that yes, there's concerns about diseases like rabies and Ebola virus, but they also are helping. So give me the pros and the cons. There are some safety concerns where if you see a bat, especially during the day in your home here in the United States, you really shouldn't handle it. So they can spread disease, correct?
Every mammal can have diseases. Every mammal, let's start with about rabies. A bat can have rabies, but usually they die also. Normally they cannot spread it. Rabies is deadly. 99% of diseases like that are usually from foxes, raccoons, skunks, dogs, and cats. And the 100%, every other mammal case, there was one time a bobcat case in the States, there's rodent cases. There was a case in Wisconsin of a child who found a sick bat on the floor, picked it up, it was a rabbit, and that's still in the news. Because it's easy to blame then a bat. Someone sees a fox, a raccoon, no one panics. Someone sees a bat, the whole school, the whole family run for vaccine shots. And that's easy. Easy when you blame an animal. Vaccine shots cost generally $200, $300 a person. There's a lot of money behind the vaccine industry. Bats are healthy. They're far away from people. If you would find a sick bat with strange behavior on the floor, don't pick it up without protection. And if you think that a child was in contact with it, then that bat spread rabies is definitely not true. Here in the tropics, we have more bats than birds, and there's nothing from rabies here. And if you live in Texas, in places where there's huge colonies, no one talks about rabies. But especially in the government, easy to blame a bat.
They're getting a bad rap, in other words. You should be cautious. You should be cautious if you see a raccoon that's acting erratically. And I know that there have been way too many stories recently in the United States of runners, joggers that are out there, and all of a sudden they're being followed by this raccoon, and it bites them, and the raccoon is rabid. So, yes, you're right. Or a dog that's acting bizarrely and aggressive, and it could have rabies. So you're right, Vino, that we need to be careful about so many different species. So what is the threat of humans to bats? You had mentioned that previously in the times of our ancestors, there were many more bats than there are now, and you'd mentioned white nose. Tell us how people and our change in climate is affecting bats.
Those bats have an extremely long lifespan. There's bats found even up to 30, 40 years. General species like the little brown bat in the States, there's one in Sweden who was found 42 years later after being banded as a baby, released in perfect conditions. It's like a human in case to compare from 300 years old, still running around every night. They are all over the world, normally large numbers, and they usually don't have a lot of natural predators. When a lot of bats come out of a cave, millions, there's a bat falcon around, scoops up a couple of bats, snakes, the falcon, the house cat. They don't have a lot of natural predators. But being that all over the world, huge numbers, no natural predators, and with an extremely long longevity, why are they endangered? Why are most species in the States getting endangered to a minimum of a minimum? But it's all about human activity. So since long time, the forest is declining. Habitat number one. Caves. Habitat number two. People went in, bats had to move out. Buildings. Habitat number three. Most are now isolated, modernized. There's just no space nowhere anymore. Everything has to be really close and immediate. And if they have a few spots, the new material is painted, it's cured, it's poison, it's plastic. If they have a few spots, people sooner or later find them. We have to throw them out then, and that's in daytime. We are day active, so when we disturb a bat in daytime, in fact, most don't make it. Then they're in total panic. It's like this. Imagine as in the middle of the jungle at night without any help. Disturbing bats in the wintertime, when they hibernate from the northern California, for example, then they don't make it in a lot of cases. There's no food for them. They run out of energy. Pesticides, highways, light pollution, sound pollution, wind turbines are not considered green energy. A lot of people talk about it from green, green, green. No, no. It kills daily the birds who smack into them. At night, there's more fatalities in bats. From the moment they get too close, before they even realize, their lungs collapse and explode from the pressure drop. A wind turbine is never green when it's on the land. Only when you put it offshore, it is greener, it's better. Maybe then it kills a seagull once in a while. That's fine for me. No, I shouldn't say that. That's also a bad joke.
Species.
All together, bats drop down to a minimum. And being endangered, now something new is coming up. Since 2006, on the east coast of the state, started upstate New York, and it's called a fungus, the white nose syndrome. When I ask visitors and my work from all over the world that you heard about, like the lion who was shot in Africa by a dentist a year and a half ago, most people heard about it. That was in the newspapers in Costa Rica, in Germany, in England. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's sad news, but it's like not an impact on my life. When I ask that you heard about the white nose syndrome, almost none. No visitor from nowhere. It was never newspapers out of the States almost. But that is the biggest mammal extinction in our life who will have a huge impact on all the American continent. And no one talks about it. But it's a fungus who started in 2005 in upstate New York. And that fungus was probably brought in from human cave explorers, from shoes or clothes, contaminated material from other continents, Europe, Russia, China, with the same fungus as prison. And nothing happens to the bats there. But when it's brought over by contaminated human clothes, material, in the cave in the state, there's no immunity. And where they hibernate, all the temperate zones in the cave cover them. Few get asphyxiated by the fungus. They have like a white muzzle, and that's then the name white nose syndrome. But most of them, they wake up because it's itchy. It disturbs their metabolism. They wake up in the middle of the winter. There's no food. They have a high mortality. The first year, up to 95% mortality in all the cave bats, like the little brown bats. After a couple of years, it can be up to 99. Now there's 31 states infected. It's already up to the middle part of the states, all the East Coast. It's now in Texas, and there's already a case also in Canada and in Washington State on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Just on the way, for example, to California. In the next decade, there can be up to a 95% mortality of a crucial animal from east to west all over the U.S. And there's a lot of people working on that. There's a lot of people working on that from all over the world, specialist scientific labs, because it's a fungus. You cannot just go in caves and defungicide them. Bats migrate, follow rivers. On this moment, there's no good news about that. But people can do something about that. We need bees, birds, butterflies, and bats in every garden. When we think about a cave bat, it's tough for them. But the bats who are in the garden, in the attic, the barn, those are the ones we can save. Those are the ones we can give them a safer spot. And then I'd like to talk about bat houses. That is something that people can do. Bat houses is a must. You can easily Google it, bat houses. There's hundreds of designs, similar to a birdhouse, but from under it's open and they fly under and they hang in there. Hundreds of designs. All the garden shops have that now. The Army is putting up, Florida is putting up huge towers around the lakes. More and more people are in neighborhoods organizing themselves because that's a must for the future, for the next generations. Bat houses in the gardens, on the edge of a garden, on a pole, on a wall, on a tree, so they have a chance to come. Not that they always will come, but there's a chance that they have a safe spot being undisturbed, because sooner or later people find in the houses them and they have to isolate it or remodelate or fix the hole in the roof, and then they are disturbed. They fly in daytime in the garden and panic. A bat house can give them a safe spot.
I love it. And the concern is, you know, so many people are hearing this going, all right, bats are our friends. Bats are good. Oh, bat house and having it in my backyard. But again, as you're saying, they are necessary to our survival. We're necessary to theirs. They can be, we can coexist with them very easily and safely. And these bat houses are just a way of assisting them. So it's easy enough to build them. Put them up in your yard, put them up, even if you're probably in a condo situation, such as myself, thinking, where can I put one of these? But
or if you don't have some spots on your own, Christmas presents, birthday presents, New Year's presents for the family. Someone who has to spot the garden, a present that is like excellent. A must.
Good idea. So as we're at the end of this interview, and thankfully I've just learned so much again, what is the one thing that you want the listeners to remember about bats, besides going to Monteverde in Costa Rica and going to the bat jungle? What should people remember?
That they're amazing creators with a really bad rep, but talking about them, education about them, then people can say from, wow. You know, most people don't even know, for example, there's a lot of pollinating bats. In the southern part of the state, there's bats who pollinate the cacti. They have an extremely long tongue. Some of those hummingbats up to 1.5 times the body size. But maybe the most important I can say, without them, there's no tequila in the world. I got these bats pollinated.
There goes my margarita.
Now we're talking. Without them, there's no bananas in the world. There's a lot of people, hummingbirds everywhere. But here in Costa Rica, if you have a hummingbird feeder, in daytime, the sugar water goes down a couple of fingers. In the morning, it's finished, and people don't know why. There's much more bats than birds with a hovering capacity. There's these amazing and important seed dispersers, pollinators. There's meat-eating bats. The most are insectivores, and those are the ones, like, all over North America, all over the world. Those are the ones who save us from all those mosquitoes, plagues, who save our crops, so we have all the food we want.
So hopefully we can all become bat men and bat women, help to save the world by saving these creatures. Vino, thank you so much. This is Vino DeBaker I've been speaking with today from the bat jungle in Monteverde in Costa Rica. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz with The Pet Doctor. Please listen again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner and hopefully a protector of bats. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.